let's move on to the first single off this new album. It's been a whole year pretty much since Future Spa, and we have this disc drop, Sunbury 97. What do you think about this, Mike?
This is great. The imagery and the memories of the, especially the music video.
Oh, yeah.
And look, especially sort of seeing the album cover to this, and it's like your love of that, I don't know, 70s or 60s era with the artwork and obviously the song, you know, Sunbury 97 now. And yeah, getting into what the year was, but is this just sort of, yeah, your love for, is it like because you grew up with, you know, that 70s music?
Lazy Highways was, that was our Australiana record, I suppose, where we really, well, that in Future Spa, but yeah, I was always really big on, I don't know, I just, before I got in a band, I was always like, lyrics, they're always, I don't know, when they reference geography, that I mean, okay, there were bands like Midnight Oil who were obviously Australian, but there weren't that many. Lyrics are either pretty generic, or they'd sometimes even mention New York and LA and stuff, and it was like, I didn't have any experience of that. So referencing Australian things was huge for us. Like, it was really important in our lyrics. And, yes, I just had this reimagining of Sunbury reborn in the year 97. And we're doing, quite a few festivals at the time. So there was all that fodder for the music and for the lyrics. Yeah, so that sort of all tied in pretty nicely. Single didn't really, yeah, didn't go anywhere, the single. I don't remember it getting really any airplay. So it wasn't a really auspicious start. Radio probably just sounded a bit like an outtake from Future Spa in a lot of ways. So you didn't elicit a lot of excitement, from radio or anyone really. But the film clip was fun to make.
Yeah, I could imagine.
Yeah,
it was all in one day.
Yeah, just in one day. Yeah, just got a chopper.
Where'd
from
you fly Essendon, out from?
Chopper from
Where'd you fly out from? Essendon Airport.
Airport. Yeah, out to the original Sunbury site. And Vanessa was around then too because she wasn't allowed on the helicopter either. So, that was kind of ludicrous because we had this idea, let's fly out to the, and the fact that the record company went for it, I mean, I don't know how much the chopper flight cost alone, but it would have been a fair bit, thousands, even back then. Yeah, and for them to go for this idea, you know, easily the most money we'd spent on a clip by miles. So it showed the record company were thinking, you know, we've got a base to build on after Future Spa. And it was a waste of money from their perspective, really, the clip, but because the song didn't get any airplay. But it was a good clip, it was a good idea. So
great song. People really call out for this one in the mosh pit, man.
Hard to get the other guys. There's some songs off this record that nobody else in the band really ever wants to play, and this is one of them. It's not an easy song. You put this on a set list and Ted will do his sort of eyebrow raise thing and and you know it's over.
So this was recorded in advance of Lazy Highways?
No, this was no, I don't think so. No, it was recorded. Yeah, it was recorded with all the other tracks, definitely, yeah.
Once again, I'm just trying to get a sense. Did you push this as a single or it was just one of a suite of songs that they picked?
No, look, I don't know. I mean, I think the record company just thought like that, you know, he was just into, it had to be riffy, it had to be guitar-y, it felt like that. So, and we didn't have any objection to it being, I don't think we had any great, oh, this has to be the single, certainly not, but yeah.
Like it's infectious. It's a really good song.
Yeah, yeah. No, and I think we thought, yeah, this might do fine, but it just didn't get any traction for whatever reason. I think possibly because people, you know, just felt, well, it sort of just sounds like another Fove song, you know, and
Well, it's on that cusp of being playful and affectionate, but can you see how it sort of is a bit of a novelty, not a novelty song, but a bit...
Yeah, totally.
I don't know, like it's just another nail into that satirical coffin.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. It's in that category again. It's a thematically quite lighthearted. Yeah, it's not a serious song. But it's
I'm not saying all songs have to be, but
no,
yeah.
No, but I feel like it's still got the thing that is overlooked in it. Even the songs that you can put in that might get categorized in that way. There's a wistfulness to it, I think. Yeah. A certain yearning that gets overlooked, I think. Yeah.
Well, it's a very good harbinger for the album. Like, it represents the album quite well.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it fits in the album very nicely. I remember Wayne wasn't that into it. I think a good song. And, yeah, it seemed like a reasonable single to go with. Didn't work, so, yeah. But, yeah, I think it's a song Foves fans like. Gets called out.
Yeah.
You know, relatively frequently, and when we play it, it goes okay, and it's not a difficult song to play, so, you know, Ted can get stuffed. He can just deal with it next time.
Like, I was talking to a young artist a few months ago who said to me, oh, he's putting out a new single. He was like, oh, Ben, have you ever put out a new single and it's just been out like crickets? I've been like, dude, I've had decades with his crickets.
Welcome back to Foves Are the Best People. I'm your host, John, and today we are joined all the way in the Kingdom of the Netherlands. We have Davy Dream Nation. Hello, Davy.
Hi, John. How are you?
Very good. How are you, Mr. Dutchman?
I'm very well, thank you. It's late winter here, almost springtime, so people are starting to get very excited about the sun returning to the Kingdom of the Netherlands, but it's not here yet, so we're still waiting a few days, probably weeks.
Well, what song are we reviewing tonight, Davy?
If I'm not mistaken, we're talking about Sunbury 97, is that correct?
Oh, yeah, that's right. It was the lead single for Lazy Highways, but actually came out, would you believe it, in the great year of 1997, November approximately, so quite a few months before the album eventually came out. I mean, you couldn't have, well, they had the song on the album too, but in 1998, so I suppose they had to make sure this one was released in 97. Well, what do you think about this song, first off?
Well, first of all, I think it's, I've listened to it a few times in the lead up to this, to this episode, and every time I've listened to it, I've probably amped up the volume a little bit, and I think I've found the kind of the perfect volume, which is very loud, basically. I think it's a really interesting slice of retro chugging rock, and I also think that it's, you mentioned that the single came out in the year before the album came out. I think it kind of occupies a funny position in the Foves discography, a little bit like Three Piece, in that it's sort of like it stands on its own as a single, but it also came out as part of an Oz Rock EP, which we can talk about, and then was kind of almost tacked on to the very end of the album. So it's a funny song. It doesn't seem to fit anywhere, but it fits a little bit in the future spa kind of retro kind of phase. And it also fits, obviously, in the Lazy Highways Australiana phase. So I think there's a lot that we can talk about this song. I like it. It's not as catchy or perhaps as sharp as some of their other songs, but I love the lyrical content, and I really would be keen also to hear what you think of it. Is this in your Foves top 10 by any chance?
I think it might just slip in there. Definitely in the top 20. Definitely in the top 20 for sure. This is a great thumping rock song. I don't like the adjective you've chosen, chuggy, but hey, you're entitled to it. This was on Channel V a lot, this clip, when I was just becoming a fan. Like, I saw it much more than I did Surf City or Charles Atlas. We had Foxtel on and off in the late 90s, you know, we get rid of it, or mum would go, you're not watching this, and she'd get rid of it. But this video clip was on it quite a lot when I was just becoming a fan. So I've heard this song a lot. I love it. I didn't realize that, but you're right. It's actually towards the end of the album proper, isn't it? Like track 12 or something?
I think it's the second last track. I think it's track 14 even. I will be very cautious about my use of adjectives, given that you love this song so much. Why don't you think chugging is any good, just out of curiosity?
I don't know. I think I'm a bit shy because in Future Spa, Redman was talking about a few songs being dirgy or dirty, and I'm like, I guess there's nothing wrong with those adjectives. And when you get into the verse, I suppose that is chuggy for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a good chug. It's like a Michael chug.
Yeah. Like a tugboat chug, you know? It's like a really, I think it's a positive thing. But I think it's interesting because it seems to me that it may have been, was it recorded at the same time as the rest of the Lazy Highways album, or was it recorded before that? You're good on these historical details. I don't really, can't keep up with them. But was it in the same sessions as Lazy Highways, or?
Very much so. You might remember in 15 Minutes to Rock when Coxie is sort of like deflated on the couch. He goes, record company doesn't think that Sunbury or Long Load are going to be much chop or whatever he says. So, yeah, no, it was recorded with all the normal sessions, yeah.
Yeah, okay. It seems to me very much a song that's part of Coxie's kind of oeuvre or subcategory of songs about music and about the music industry and musical culture. I was thinking back to Orgamo Sarion, Doctor's song Brotherhood Bin on one of the B-sides of, I think it was Dwarf on Dwarf, right? You know, about that sort of band playing gigs and, you know, kind of hanging out in the van type sort of thing. Obviously, you've got Three Piece, and then you've got Kaios off Future Spa. This is, you know, kind of taking it a step further. This is sort of like musical history.
Yes.
And Coxie in this sort of, in this vein of like, I'm telling you kids who today obviously don't remember it, but you know, about this crazy event that happened in the early 70s, you know, shut up and listen, you might learn something. I think it's got a little bit of that vibe to it.
Okay, boomer. Okay. We get it. Australia's Woodstock. Sorry, well, you're Gen X.
Do you really? I mean, yeah, I've been reading up a bit on the Sunbury Festival, and there was a lot of just, you know, comparison to Woodstock. It doesn't really, you know, wash for me. I mean, you know, they're completely different vibes. And I think there was one section, one paragraph in the Wikipedia entry for the Sunbury Festival that described, you know, if Woodstock was about acid and free love, then, you know, Sunbury is about, you know, VB and kind of bogan rock. But yeah, maybe we can discuss that a little bit more, but, you know, I think that you mentioned the sort of the boomer, the boomer thing here, and what I find most interesting is that Coxie is putting himself in this song in a position of being a kind of a child of Sunbury 73. But if you do the maths on that, obviously that would make him, you know, conceived in 1973, recording this song in 1997. that would make him sort of 23 and a half years old, maybe. I'm pretty sure he was maybe a couple of years older than that when this record was made, but I'm too polite to ask how old he is.
67, he was born, 1967.
67, there you go, yeah.
He's got three other siblings. It's possible maybe his youngest sibling was born 72 or 3, I think, okay, but definitely not him, no. Remember, Fight Me on 40, he said, I saw a man on the moon from my nursery in 69, so, yeah.
Yeah, well, there you go. So I think it's interesting, we can talk a little bit more about the role he's taking on in this song as someone who's celebrating the fact that he is a child of this festival. Obviously, it's fictional, but it seems like he's having a lot of fun and having a lot of fun with this sort of idea of this early 1970s retro pub rock. And I think that as a general statement, we could almost say that this the release of this single coincides with you know, like sometimes people talk about a band's imperial phase, right? And I think that for me, this is their imperial pub rock phase, because if you look at the tracks that come after it, the whole album that comes after it, you might say, and the number of cover songs that they record during this period as well. And I believe that they were, you know, doing a pub rock kind of series of gigs at this time as well. Or
Year later, yeah. Year or two later, but yep.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, sort of performing as a pub rock band and so on. This is a really interesting phase in the Fauves' career for that reason. The touchstone songs that they choose to cover, the style in which they cover them, the way they kind of reinvent their older songs as well, you know, like the... Rising Blow on this EP as well. So I think it's really fascinating. And you know, I've learned a little bit during my research here as well about what life was really like in 1973 in Sunbury, Victoria. And I'm sort of, you know, I'm glad I feel lucky that I missed it. It was, it sounds like a very, very different era to the one that we're in now.
Well, if that TV show in Britain, Life on Mars, is anything to go by, it's a mixture of shocking and hilarious with a lot of cigarettes chucked in.
Yeah, I'd say so, yeah.
Where do you want to go? You want to go lyrics, music, or Sunbury 1973?
Well, I'm happy to go with whatever you like. The one thing that I wanted to mention was, maybe we can talk about the music, you know, in a minute, because it's mm-hmm. all been sort of meta at the moment. But just like Joni Mitchell's song Woodstock was a song about a festival by someone who wasn't there, you know,
yeah.
I would say, you know, Coxie is writing a song about a festival that he never went to either. But there's something interesting about this idea of... inherent in the title of a revival of the Sunbury Festival. You know, so this sort of imaginary festival that Coxie may have curated in 1997, that would be held at Sunbury. It makes me wonder who would be at that festival. Was Billy Thorpe still alive in 1997, and would he have kind of been one of the headline acts? would it have been possible to find some of these obscure acts who performed at Sunbury in the early 70s and to see if they could, you know, get back together for one last gig, you know, the sort of the Farnham one last time tour. I wanted to mention that. But when we think of Sunbury, you know, it's not exactly the same as what we would think of as the Rolling Stones' Rock and Roll Circus or Bob Dylan's Rolling Thunder Review. This is pretty much, you know, I think the picture I have of the Sunbury 97 Festival is like pretty much straight ahead, four to the floor, Oz rock. You know, there's no kind of performance aspect to this, I don't think. There might be bands who are playing at 3 or 4 a.m. in the morning, but they're still just Oz rock bands. I don't think there'd be anything on anyone's rider except, you know, cans of beer. But it does, for me, beg the question, you know, could there have been a festival that the Fauves curated in 1997? And what would it have been like to be there?
According to their output on the B-sides, it would be the Radiators, it would somehow be John Farnham, maybe Sadie Cleaning Lady Era, not You're the Voice. Early Aussie Crawl in their diapers, I guess. They were in their early teens.
Dragon,
of course.
Yeah. But I have a feeling that Peter Brock would have been invited to attend in some kind of capacity. Maybe he would have opened the festival, you know, from the roof of his Tirana, doing donuts in the front of the stage area. Yeah,
no doubt.
Yeah. But yes, let's go to the music if that's where you'd like to go.
So I forgot to mention in Lazy Highway, Sunbury 97's got the best riff they ever wrote.
Yeah.
Yeah, go and listen to that yourself.
Okay, well, I think unfortunately this tuning is the standard Future Spa tuning
C, G, D, F, A, B flat, which I'm effing sick of trying to work out. Maybe I'll do that later in the episode. But in standard tuning, it's all sort of in the key of D. And sort of the verse is just sort of D, a lot of D's, and then down to C. Come on, let's run. D, 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 follow the sun. C, and then follow sun. B-R-E-9-9-7. So just two chords. D, 7, get our tickets and our cigarettes. Drink down to 7-11. Then C, F, G, D, G. See, F, D, that I'm a child, G, of B flat, Sunbury, A73. And then the chorus is just a succession of Fs and B flats and A minor. Hey, you're right, F, B flat, A minor, your friends tonight. B flat round town in the warm moonlight. F, hey, did I mention that's B flat? Look what we're getting, G. Access all areas to heaven. B flat at 97, G. And then back to D, E, C, D, G, G. G sharp. Yeah, that's most of the song. And then the bridge is just, you know, the bridge bit, the instrumental, like da 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 da, F F D D A D C, F F D D, that sort of jerky bit, F D F D A D C, or something in the future spa tuning. Very satisfying to play and great riffage. I've got no problem with it. It's pretty basic. I can't really find much else apart from guitars, bass, and drums, although in the verse bit where it's a break, there's no vocals. It sounds like there's an ooh backing vocal, or I don't think it's a keyboard or something, a slight one.
Okay, yeah, I
couldn't
that.
Quite work it out. It's very low in the mix. It sounds like doesn't sound like the harmonics of a stringed instrument. Anyway, audiophiles can say if they hear anything there. I only hear it in the instrumental bits of the verse. Come on, let's run, follow Sunbury, that bit. Yeah.
Yeah. I love Dougie's drumming in this, as always. You know, there's just these little flourishes where it's just like a machine gun going off. You know, it's just, I just love the energy that he brings to the kit. Similarly, I love Jack's bedrock bass. I think this is a really, you know, like, I mean, of course, this song, like many of the songs on Future Spa, there is a fairly limited palette of notes for the bass to choose from. But I feel very reassured listening to this song and hearing Jack's bass leading us through it. There's a little bit of, in the film clip to the song, You can see towards the end that I think it's Coxie doing some sort of wah-wah type effect on his guitar. I don't know if that's true. Yeah. And very high up on the fretboard, you know, this sort of eccentric, exaggerated noodling going on there, which I think is very fitting, having seen a little bit of the footage from some of these, you know, Sunbury gigs, that there was a lot of that kind of noodling going on there. I think, maybe I take back my chugging. You know, I think this is a bit more animated than that. I think that's probably how I felt listening to it at low volume. I was a little bit like, oh, this is sort of like, this is a fairly average kind of energy level song. But I think at high volume, it comes through a little bit more. There is a sharpness and a little bit of angularity to the chord changes and so on. A little bit like Self-Abuser, I would say, on Future Spa. There's a little bit of that kind of dynamic going on there in the chord changes and in the verses.
Sunbury!
Yeah, we'll do Sunbury. Yeah. Gets back.
The Greek aesthetic!
Can't remember.
Stop.
First thing you notice about this song is that it has a fantastic driving bass line in there. Reminds me a little bit of maybe like Stone Temple Pilots bass line, or maybe even like a Grinspoon, but without the crunch, so to speak. He sings about being potentially conceived at the Sunbury 73 concert, which would be a very, very cool marker to have in your life. And then they kind of sing about Sunbury 97, which as best I can tell is a fictional concert, but maybe something he sort of would have wished he could bring together to sort of close the loop on his own, you know, conception to achievements, I guess. This is a song and a few folk songs. You could kind of put them into the category of sounding a bit like Custard or maybe even Spiderbait, but because the vocal can be quite poppy and I guess without any real anger or anything in it ever, but the actual music is always quite crunchy, so it actually sounds almost like somebody else singing over the top of one of those bands. Again, as per our usual things with the Foves, we're singing along the melody, and the cultural references here are thick and fast. We've got a 7-Eleven, we've got Sandman, we've got the Sandman car, Billy Thorpe and the Aztecs, which I love, so I'm glad they got a mention. And then there's at the end, there's this fantastic sort of 70s outro that they're going, 70s sort of rock outro, and I really wish they'd expand upon that. I mean, the way that comes out, that could be its own song, and there's a sound that they play really well. So, yeah, interesting song. Fictional concert that I wish had happened, because I probably would have gone.
Davey, I want to throw on you a contention, a theory, maybe an allegation. No.
Oh.
Some people on this podcast who love this album to death have called into question whether the singles chosen from it were either good or representative of the album as a whole, forgetting whether they fucked up, you know, should have released it earlier or whatever. Are you generally happy with the singles, or is it always coulda, shoulda, woulda? A Charles Atlas Way, Surf City, this, and Kicking On, almost as an afterthought.
Kicking On.
Yeah.
I
suppose it depends what you think of the album as a whole, which I haven't really got to yet.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's the key question for me. And I think, as I may have alluded to in a couple of previous episodes, this, especially Surf City Limits, that became sort of like I reached the city limits of, you know, something with my kind of fandom of the Foves. And I think for me, there was something about the irony slipping over into parody that occurred with that song in particular, that troubled me at the time and therefore led me to pay less attention to this album than I had to Future Spa. But to come back to what I was talking about previously in terms of Sunbury as a standalone single or as part of an EP that preceded the album, you know, I think that Sunbury, for that reason, I don't see it as being really an essential part of the album. In the same way that Three Piece was an unlisted track on Future Spa, you know, these are songs that that kind of exist outside of the album. I think that if we look at the Lazy Highways album as a whole, I can't think of many other songs that I would suggest as singles. I think that, you know, given if I was a record company executive and I was faced with this smorgasbord of songs, yeah, I would have immediately chosen Surf City Limits just because it's the most kind of catchy, custody kind of song on the album, you know. I don't know if I would have chosen Kicking On at all. So, you know, you see what I mean? Like, but that's just my kind of, you know, personal bias. But four singles is a lot, right, for one album?
Yeah, for sure. Maybe tempered by the fact that it is 15 songs, but, yeah, only three for Future Spa, that's right.
And all three of those were killer songs, you know. Like, and but I think that they could have chosen a number of other songs off that album as singles as well. But I don't think the same is true so much for Lazy Highways.
I noticed that many hardcore fans, even Jared Kennedy ran the poll, I think, on the website, yeah, the Facebook page, and Campfire King always comes up so high. That's not necessarily my opinion. I'm going to have to really think hard about that song. I generally don't enjoy it heaps, but I know I can't. I people love that song, and it's a ballad. I don't know if you could release that as a single from a band like the Foves.
Although I guess that, you know, they released Caesar's
it's
Surrender,
the heavy heart
is,
type,
you know,
thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's Campfire King, of course, is not. You know, it's not really on my top 20, I would say. But, you know, there's something about the genuine sentiment, I think, that people respond to in those sorts of songs. Like you mentioned Heavy Heart as well. You know, like there's, you know, UMI have so many amazingly energetic songs, but it's that one that people kind of remember, or that, you know, that a lot of people remember. But I think that's sort of as part of, you know, the way the band talks about the Lazy Highways album or the songs on that album as being more kind of that they weren't interested in doing another Futures Bar that was just full of high energy 3-minute pop songs. They wanted to do something different, something that was a bit less kind of I don't know, aggressive is not the word, but, you know, a bit less animated, and so I think that, you know, in a way it's an album that's sort of like we look at it now in retrospect perhaps as a kind of a swan song for that stage of their career, you know, in which there were slower and sort of more melancholic songs that maybe they wouldn't have had any interest in putting on earlier albums because that wasn't the energy or the vibe that they were going for in their recordings.
And even though this is a down-tuned delight, just the same as Future Spa, it doesn't sound as heavy, the overall sentiment and the tone of the guitars. It doesn't... I mean, it's Future Spa-esque, but it's definitely with a lighter production... as you say, maybe more chuggy than dirgy. Foves Get Nostalgic. The West Australian, November 20, 1997. The era of free love, mud fights and sleeping in teepees is given a new lease of life on the Foves' latest single, Sunbury 97. The upbeat single, which will feature on the Australian act's new album, due out next year, represents the group's idea of what the Sunbury Festival, which originally took place in the outskirts of Melbourne in the early 70s, would be like if staged now. I got to thinking about it because there are a lot of similar festivals now, says guitarist and vocalist Andrew Cox. There's been a resurgence of those things, and I started thinking about the Aussie original in the 70s. The concept of the song may have also been influenced by Cox's memories of growing up in the 70s, when he went for rides in his father's red classic Holden Sandman. I remember those times fairly fondly, he said. Maybe because when you're a kid you don't have many worries and just go about having a good time. My dad had a Sandman with red panels and black sides. The Foves, who were in Perth in August with UMI, took only 3 weeks to record their fourth album in Melbourne. We got into the studio after having played over the past 12 months, Coxie said. We were tired of loud music, so the record is a bit quieter than previous ones. We were going for something a little more quiet and reflective, I suppose. Coxie doesn't think the Sunbury 97 single represents a change in the band's musical direction towards parodying other musical styles or movements. I don't see it as a direction, he said. There is an element that is ironic, but there is also a serious side to our music.
But I guess we don't take ourselves as seriously as some people in the music industry do. And the reason why the Foves are not so wild on stage anymore is because they have improved technically. We were trying to cover up the fact that we were pretty bad, Cox says. Lyrics. Do you want to move on to lyrics?
Yeah. Look, I hate to be this guy, but there's a mention of getting their cigarettes from shrink-wrapped from 7-Eleven. The first Australian 7-Eleven store didn't open until 1977. Either he's talking about, you know, being at this fictitious festival in 97, the Sunbury 97, which is, like, I think totally acceptable, or it's an interesting kind of non sequitur in the song. But I love the lyrics to this song. I love the sort of the references to the Sandman. I wonder how many Sandman panel vans in Sunbury would have had surfboards on the roof. You know, like, Sunbury's a fair way from the coast, but I'll let that one slide as well. And I just love this idea of renaming a town in every state Sunbury.
Have you looked it up?
I'm assuming that he hasn't actually succeeded in renaming them yet. But maybe if we asked Coxie personally, maybe there are towns in other states of Australia that he privately refers to as Sunbury. Here we are in bloody Sunbury, New South Wales again, he says, you know, while entering Deniliquin. I don't know. maybe there's somewhere in Queensland that for Coxie will always be Sunbury. I think that the song is kind of, there are kind of more parts to this song lyrically and structurally than there are in some of the other songs that they've recorded and released. There is a kind of a backstory there. This sort of the idea of returning to the festival to see the tree where his parents conceived him. you know, there's a whole kind of there's a whole skit in just that one line. I like these lyrics because the more you kind of think about them and reflect on them, the more they build up a picture of a certain kind of story in exactly the same way as a song like It's Not You, It's Me. Yeah. You know, like the sort of the lyrical the story being told there about this sort of this trip to Gundagai and staying in a hotel there, a little bit like Sentimental Motel Journey. You know, there these little kind of vignettes of kind of life on the road or in sort of country towns that I think Coxie, you know, really excels at in particular. So I think, you know, that's what I have to say about the lyrics.
I had a few notes. First of all, my mum always craps on about when 7-Elevens first came here. What year did you say it was? 77?
I thought it was 77, but I may be wrong.
Okay.
You know.
She was probably 25 or 6 then. She always talks about how much of a godsend it was if you wanted milk and stuff late at night, even if you had to pay the premium. Like, it was. And these days, people probably don't even realise, you know, it meant 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. People probably, right. Kids under 20 don't remember that. I'm assuming shrink-wrap cigarettes was like a real new thing at the time. Was that like a, wow, space age we're living in? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. That's an interesting point. Yeah.
There's the tree where Dad and Mum conceived me. Well, obviously his parents weren't cool and doing it properly because you're supposed to fuck in the mud, you know. Oh, tree, that's luxury. We're busting our friends tonight from what, prison? Driving around town in the warm moonlight. Hey, did I mention, look, we're getting access all areas to heaven, Sunbury 97. So
it seems to be more about the audience, yeah, than a... First, start off again with your friends, the girls in the back and the boys bad up on the roof rack. Who's that, Billy Thorpe and the Aztecs? I've got dreams to rename a town in every state. Sunbury. I did have a look at this once. What have we got? We've got a lot of sunny sides, sunny Dale, sunny cliffs, sunny Bray, sunny bank. There's like heaps of sunny banks, sunny corner, sunland, sunderland. Oh, that's a bit of a lend. Sunday Creek, Sun Valley. But yeah, no other Sunburys. What else is the rest of the lyrics? Faces bathed in hot stage light. Up on the speakers, or up on the something 70s sneakers, speakers, the first one's a dud, the next one's a keeper.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Hmm.
I have a little bit of a clue to this. I read Jim McGeaney's autobiography. I don't know if you've read it. You know, the guitarist from Midnight Oil.
Yeah.
And when he was starting out in the 70s, he has a bit of nostalgia for like pre-78 Australian amplifiers. I think because he said a lot of the pub rock bands and Sunbury's festivals, that they got local manufacturers here to make knockoffs of like World of Music or Fender amps. And apparently they made them heaps of them just for these festivals and things and all the early Oz rock. And apparently they're of really good basic, I don't know, soldering or something or electricity. And he made a big point of talking about all these brands that existed for about 5 or 6 years in the 70s to feed people like Billy Thorpe. So, and yep, Jim McGeaney has a bit of a hard-on for those old original speakers. So maybe Coxie's alluding to a bit of audio tech there. Yeah, just a hunt. The only other notes I had was the Sunbury Festival, apparently, who's the dorky bass player from the Seekers? Not Judith Thurum or the other guy.
I don't know.
We can't Google this because Google doesn't exist. But
no.
Trump, Musk's fucked it up. But he was the Member of Parliament for Sunbury, and apparently he tried to ban the permit or something.
Oh.
Guy Athol. You know, the dorky tall one with the glasses?
Okay, right.
Yeah, he tried to say no Sunbury.
Why?
I don't know.
That's outrageous. Paul Hogan... introduced, you know, was the kind of compere or the person who introduced the festival in in 73, I believe. I'm just looking at the notes here. MC'd. He was the MC, sorry. But if you have a look at the wonderfully named acts who appeared there, you probably get a bit of a vibe for what sort of music was going on. The Captain Matchbox Whoopee Band, Mulga Bill's Bicycle Band, maybe that says it all.
Gudinski was involved, wasn't he? Is this an early Mushroom thing? Gudinski got involved, or Michael Chugg or something?
Apparently, he operated a lucrative concession selling watermelon to festival goers, quote Wikipedia. Another factoid with no sources, of course. So, you know, should take that with
a... You don't put sauce on watermelon, Davey. Unless it's the white powder sauce, if you know what I mean.
No.
Do you own the Sunbury 97 single? Physically, or did you at one stage?
I didn't. My brother did, and I would always listen to his copy of it whenever I went around to his house. So yeah, he had the CD single with the kind of, you know, with the kind of the murky green cover of the hill, I guess, which was the backdrop to the actual festival, I'm assuming.
And the conception.
Yeah. Oh yes, I can see the tree.
Paul
there.
Is Paul Hogan Coxie's your own research, people.
yeah. Draw your own conclusions. You know, like, we're just putting all this stuff out here. The other thing, I you mentioned the video. I never saw the video at the time. So, actually...
You're bad luck. It's great.
Looking at it again, at it again now, there was a sort of a vibe going on with all those film clips, right? I mean, there was the helicopter in this one. There was the big speedboat in Surf City Limits. Was there anything for Kicking On? Was there a car? I don't know.
They didn't make a Kicking On clip, remember? They were going to do cricket, but they never ended up, yeah.
Oh, that's right, yes.
But in Surf City Limits on Rene Rifkin's yacht, I think there's a helicopter on the back of it. I'm sure there's a helicopter in Surf City Limits clip.
God, they've got everything in that clip, haven't they? They've got the motorbike, you know, the...
Chicky Babes. Yeah, the Chicky Babes, the car.
Yeah.
There's a car.
There's a lot of footage from the Sunbury Festival in Sunbury 97 as well, which I found kind of interesting. They must have sourced that from one of the docos that was made at the time. I know there's a full documentary from the 72 edition on YouTube, but I haven't really seen much of the 73 stuff.
Speaking of the helicopter, they should have, if they're going all 70s, they should have replicated the ABBA front cover. You know, the one, Arrival, when they're in the helicopter? Arrival. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, wow.
That lost opportunity. Before we go, I've just got a quote here from Roger Grierson. He goes, "A single is chosen by consensus between artist, label, and management. The role of the A&R person at a record company is to read the tea leaves between the manager, the band, and the marketing people with an eye to what radio would like. Sometimes it's self-explanatory, other times it's not, but one of the roles of the A&R person is really to get consensus and emotional buy-in. In most cases, to be honest, they default to the marketing department. Do you think this was a hard song to market? They just didn't pick it up on Triple J, really. But on Channel V, they did.
I think it's probably too sophisticated. There's, you know, oh, I mean, you've got niche. a song like Self Abuser. Okay, that's you know, that operates at a couple of different levels, right? But you've got something like Sunbury 97. I mean, I think that, okay, I'm Joe Bloggs at JB Hi-Fi, right? And I look at this and I go, what's, and it's like, okay, the Fauves, yeah, sure, Sunbury, what's that, you know? And, is this supposed to be funny? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, right? And I think it is very funny. I think it's very witty and kind of, you know, nostalgic and ironic and all of those things. So maybe it's just a bit too smart. Too smart for its own good, yeah.
Many thanks for joining us, Davey.
Thank you, John.
Bye.
Bye.
Show us your tunings.
Yes, please.
Sunbury really looked like a concerted effort by the band to have a hit, and you can see an instance of it in the instrumental break, which, you know, up to that point, the Fauves were kind of wigging out and doing something pretty extreme a la, you know, Daydream Nation, Sonic Youth. In this case, it's really more akin to something that Midnight Oil might have in one of their instrumental breaks. Everything looked set up for a huge success for the Fauves when they released Sunbury 97. It looked like it was going to be a super big hit. There was lots of press. There was lots of independent radio here in Melbourne playing it. I remember hearing it on the way to cricket training, cranking up the volume and thinking, wow, it's going to be so great to remember the time when I could see the Fauves at the local pub and not, you know, the superstars they've now become.
Hey there, Fauves fans. Tom here from Canberra, sending in some love for Sunbury 97. I thought this was one of the best tracks on Lazy Highways, and I see it as a really nice continuation, I guess thematically, from some of the tracks on Future Spa. I always sort of imagine there's this kid growing up in the suburbs. They've gone through the Big Brother age. They've dreamt about a Melbourne star dragster. They've attempted a skateboard world record, but now they've grown up a little bit. They've got their license. They've bought a secondhand panel van through the Trading Post. loaded up and headed north to the legendary Sunbury Pop Festival. I'd always loved this song from the first time I listened to Lazy Highways, but my appreciation of it really grew when I was watching a Sunbury documentary on ABC with my parents. This really helped me understand what a culturally significant moment this was in Oz rock history in terms of Australian music and Australian artists being recognised as just as relevant and just as important as those from overseas. I'd always assumed that Billy Thorpe and the Aztecs were name dropped in the song as it was just the name that fitted best. Having watched a few docos and speaking to my parents who were around during that era, I now understand that he really was considered a big deal and certainly was the king of Sunbury. Sadly, unlike in the song, I was born about 10 years too late to be considered a child of Sunbury. One can only dream. The other thing I really love about this song is it doesn't get bogged down in the pure nostalgia or the nuts and bolts of the festival itself. I think the chorus in particular does a really great job of capturing that sense of freedom and this youthful optimism that you know, anyone can relate to from attending festivals and things like that in their formative years. So in that regard, I think this song is just a really perfect celebration and tribute to the festival and the sense of folklore, I guess, that fits in around it. Anyway, that's it from me. Thanks for listening. I'm going to go and YouTube the film clip right now. Have a good one.
And today we are violating every podcast rule out there, and I have three guests with me. All the way on my right is Tim Long. Hello, Tim.
Hi, John. This is the sound of my voice.
And we have Stuart.
Hello, this is the sound of my voice.
And last but not least, Chris.
Oh, hello, and this is the sound of my voice.
Unmissable.
Well, Tim, tell the listeners, what song are we reviewing today?
John, we're starting with a review of Sunbury 97.
Wow. Do you like this song, Tim?
Well, John, this is the first time I've listened to this song in about 25 years, so it's a bit of an unboxing, if you like, where we're seeing what we think of it.
While we've got you here, Tim, in 98, this is the year that I saw the Fauves first ever in my life at a cold festival hall with I wonder who. Was it you and who else?
I was there.
Yeah?
I don't know who else was there. I know Regurgitator was there.
And Tism, but I was talking more about our friends. Obviously, it wasn't that memorable for you. We had Ptolemy and Tom Goddard there with us.
Ah, I would not have picked that in a million years.
And the legacy, what we know, what I've told listeners heaps of times is that you actually were so impressed by the Fauves or Curious or whatever that you actually went out and bought the album, Lazy Highways.
I did. Whether it was before or after, I don't know. You're probably right. Why not? It's a good story.
Did you have a good... Was that your first gig ever, maybe?
Yep. I'd say so. The first proper one of my own choosing.
And Tism, you didn't think to rush out and buy one of their albums or...?
No. I don't know if I could have sustained that.
Couldn't afford the scratch. Two CDs at once. Talking $50.
That's true, actually. That's a big outlay back then. Yeah.
Were you always going to Campbell JB? Was that sort of when you were... Where you were buying records?
Yeah, that would have been the main place. There are a couple of others.
What about Alley Tunes in Hawthorne?
No, that was years later, wasn't it?
And what sort of music were you listening to at the time, Tim? Green Day.
Well, it was the height of grunge and, pop punk. So, you know, a lot of that. Yeah. I found out later there was other 90s music, which I didn't listen to at all. Like, you know, all the R&B stuff. You know, I didn't even really know that existed until 5 years ago.
And somehow the album made its way into my hands and you didn't see it thereafter. Is that right?
I didn't see
it. Sounds right.
For some time, perhaps. I think it was probably by mutual agreement at that point. I would hope.
Mutually agreed by John. This is mine now.
At the gig, my favourite song I heard them play was this song called Long Load. I don't know if they played Sunbury 97, but basically I said to Tim, can I borrow the album because I just want to copy that song Long Load onto cassette. And I don't think you saw it again. But anyway.
Damn. Ah, admissions. You know, this is This is like a deathbed confession or something.
You might get that CD back today if you ask nicely.
Yeah.
And Stu, in 98, you were probably, this is July, we saw them at Festival Hall.
Yeah, yeah.
You were already a hardcore Something for Kate fan then?
Yep. We saw them around that time, I think, at the Hi-Fi Bar, 98-ish, yes. mid-98.
Not from there.
Not from there, that's right. I remember you having a chat to Heinz and they wore the boiler suits
yep.
that they, I think, famously wore on the recovery, possibly even that morning, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they kind of disappeared after that. I don't know.
Maybe there's 28 days.
28 days were there. They were the third one, yeah.
I remember he was saying something on mic. He's not a funny guy like Coxie, but he was saying, don't try heroin, you know. Try your chuff and your alcohol, your Melbourne bitter, but lay off the heroin.
Right.
Here's our next number, Sandons.
And this is at the underage gig with 15-year-olds. Yeah, that's great. Good advice.
And I always remember we were making fun of Ricane because they were singing some song about...
Yeah.
And then Little River Band were playing.
They were very serious, Ricane, from memory. Yeah, I don't know what happened to them either, but intense band.
And Something for Kate were good.
Great. Still are.
And then Chris, who were you? I mean, I'm assuming 98, you were just listening to Steve Earle, Copperhead Road on repeat. That's your sort of music?
No, I'd literally had no introduction to music back then. I was probably still digging holes in the backyard and...
Chris dug a hole.
Yeah. No, I didn't even know you guys went to these concerts back then. I don't know where I was.
You made up for it in later years because you've gone to a lot of Fove's gigs with me and Michael and Madeline.
They were always good. I was never really into it as much as you guys, obviously, but yeah, they were always good. It was always a good audience and a good vibe and yeah, just overall it was just good. I always enjoyed them. Yeah. 15, gosh.
Well, they made a big impression on me.
Oh, obviously. Yeah, yeah.
It was all about the Fauves and Regurgitator and Something for Kate.
Yep. Yeah. Now, at 15, I was...
You driving trucks at 15, Chris?
No. I was riding my bike pretending I was driving trucks, so let's put it like that.
Drinking beers you kept in your locker.
From Davison Fan. His old man used to buy them for me. And yeah, I probably only had about 4 stubbies in that whole year, but...
Yeah.
You know.
Just iconic.
Yeah, it was just something you could do. And I remember drinking one on the way to the gym one day, Ruben, the future school captain, and he says to me, what's drinking beer going to do for you? And, he was right, it didn't do anything for me, but just did it because I could do it. And,
he turned his life around since.
Well, I was never one of the cool dudes, so...
you weren't a cool dude out seeing Something for Kate every second weekend last year.
No, it just felt good to do something different and not get busted for it. You know what I mean?
So, ladies and gentlemen, Chris is a truck driver, so I hope you'll join us later for Long Load, Chris, yeah?
Obviously, of course.
You've carted a few long loads in your time.
Well, I don't have a B-double license, but...
Semi-rigid.
Some long stuff. Semi-trailers are longest.
Well, today we're reviewing Sunbury 97. Lead single off the album. It's obviously, we're watching the video clip now, which I think is pretty fun. The helicopter, they're recreating the original Sunbury 73 concert, which is in Sunbury in the northwest.
I assume it's the same place looking at the clip. Is that right?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
About 30K-ish Diggers Rest, I think I saw online.
Chris, tell us, you're a truck driver. Yeah. Do you go to Sunbury much?
I did in my old job.
Is it sort of like the Cranbourne of the northwest?
In a way, it's quite nice, actually, because it's got, like, a backdrop of green hills and, I mean, it was like a town, probably, obviously, back then, but now suburbia's caught up to it. But I like it. It's got a very nice feel. And we went there with Sabo, you and I, when we went to see the Fauves.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, it's friendly and just, you know, tree-lined streets and... I really like it. But yeah, I used to go to the Bunnings there when it was getting going and deliver there. I quite like Sunbury. Yeah. It's like, as I said, it was like a town, had a charm of a town, and yeah, now suburbia's caught up to it. And yeah, good place. I like it.
Famously, just down the road is where the race course is. Yeah, that... Calder
King of the Mountain, is that it? The no.
Isn't that Thunderdome? I don't
Calder
know.
Calder Park, yeah. Calder Park. Also known as, probably, I think the Thunderdome.
Now, did Mad Max rip that off or was it inspired by or just a coincidence?
Oh, I don't know. It would have
Mad Max's filled. Film's not too far from there, I think. Some a bit further up the road.
Yeah, down Werribee Way, but probably all over.
Yeah, Werribee South, I think, and Laverton North. They did a fair bit of it around Cherry Lane, I believe. And
to us here, they seem close together to us, although probably to a local. They seem pretty far apart.
Google Maps says
they look kind of the same.
Google Maps says Sunbury is about 42 kilometres northwest from Melbourne, the CBD.
Yeah, it might be a little bit closer. As a crow flies, it might be a bit closer, but I wouldn't have said 42. I would say maybe it's probably about the same distance as Lilydale. It's probably like 38.
But you ever made any deliveries to Calder Racecourse?
No, never. But I did go there back in around 1990 because my dad was quite into the NASCARs or OzCars, whatever they were, and they used to have HQ racing, and that was always my favourite. It was really good back then, and everyone used to bring their own grog, and it's probably not like it would be today. It'd be probably a lot more controlled and just bollards and high-vis everywhere.
Famously, it's where Guns N' Roses played, didn't they, in 91, and there was no water or something.
It was a disaster, yeah. I think it was, super hot, was it? But then apparently it started pissing down with rain, like, later on, so
they should have gone to the original Sunbury site, maybe. A bit more luck there. And also, listeners, famously, Darrell Braithwaite of Sherbet fame, horses, you know, he was working for 10 years, poor, destitute, for the Bullock Council, cleaning the roads of Sunbury and Diggers Rest, I think, before he had his, you know, Farnham-type comeback. I've been to Sunbury a few times. It's all right.
No, I love it. Haven't been there, don't know it that well, but from what
are there a few industrial parks there? Is it?
I think there are, nothing major, but it's got on the way, like as you get off the freeway, I think it's Vineyard Road, and it's actually got a lot of vineyards, and it just got like a nice, sort of feels a bit like the Yarra Valley, but you can see the vineyards and, as I said, the rolling hills, and you come into the town, and I like that. It's just has a good feel about it. Like I say, I like it. Yeah. Maybe I should move there. You reckon?
I thought you were a Doveton man.
No.
Song, guys. What do you think of the song? Thoughts? Good rock song? Stu, do you like it? Did you do a bit of homework?
I watched the clip through a couple of times. I like the clip. The song didn't leave any strong impressions. It felt, and I think we're going to talk about Surf City Limits, it felt like a bit of a prototype for that song almost. Like it was even around the chorus-ish. Yeah. So that was my impressions.
Is it like any Something for Kate song?
No. maybe if I had a couple more listens, I might find a link, but no.
Paul Dempsey, thanks for coming down to Sunbury. Thanks for coming down.
I think I haven't had a really close look at the lyrics, but I think there's quite a bit in there, to unpack. Maybe we're going to need to get them up in front of us, but there's a few jokes, I think, about someone being conceived there at the last one, coming along to the next one, and I don't quite understand why they arrive in a helicopter, although I guess it's a bit, I imagine they're kind of living a dream, you know, sort of living a fantasy of, being flown in from interstate or overseas, you know, coming to do their concert. We can see them doing that concert here, interspersed with, there was a shot of, I don't know, was that the original concert?
Yep.
You know, they're doing a bit of a mesh, Someone was sitting there thinking, what if we'd been around to play Sunbury? You know, what would that look like? And that's how you get to here.
Little something like this.
I mean, Big Day Out's got nothing on Sunbury. Speaking about the helicopter, the infamous story is Queen. Queen played in 74 or something before they were big, before their big hits, and they just came from a limousine straight from Essendon Airport with makeup on and did their sort of glam stuff, and all the bogan rockers were like, oh, what's this? So, you know, but yeah, I don't think anyone.
The story I read is they got booed off the stage pretty much. I think they said they'd come back and get more successful and come back, and they probably did. So good for them. 74-ish, so I don't know when Queen got big, later in the 70s.
75 was a big one, wasn't it, with Killer Queen or something? I don't know. We go through the lyrics, guys. So Come on, let's run, follow the sun, follow Sunbury 97, get our tickets and our cigarettes. Shrink-wrapped at 7-Eleven. Must have been really rare in the 70s, like finally you're getting, like, you know how you buy cigarettes and they've got the plastic around them? Maybe that was a new thing. Maybe.
Is that an anachronism? Would they have had 7-Eleven? Might have just been your local servo, or...
Well, there you go.
They might have got their research a bit pre-internet, you know.
Yeah, Coxie, you stumbled on that one. There's the tree where Mum and Dad conceived me. Do you believe that I'm a child on a Sunbury 73? Hey, you're right, the chorus. Hey, you're right, because we're busting out your friends tonight, driving around town in the warm moonlight. Hey, did I mention, look what we're getting. Access all areas to heaven, Sunbury 97.
Yep, so they're going to Sunbury 97, so they're shrink-wrapped. Oh, right. Cigarettes.
Yes.
More recent than the previous comment would indicate.
Did it come back as a special edition 97?
It's a real thing, isn't it?
Really?
Well, they brought back the Woodstocks, didn't they? 91, 90.
Yeah. 94, yeah. 99, I think.
I think I have a vague memory of my parents talking about an actual, you know, a redo of a Sunbury Festival. I mean, I guess it may not have been called Sunbury 97, but that definitely needs looking up.
Did your parents go to Sunbury? Mine, I think, were Dad's English, and Mum was not going to go to a rock concert. She famously said to Dad at a Status Quo concert, "Seamus, let's go home. It's too loud. It's too loud." Sunbury 97. I wonder why they never tried to resurrect it. They just went ahead with Big Day Out and all that sort of stuff. Or
I think it was Australia Day weekend from what I read. So, yeah, it is kind of the precursor to Big Day Out in a way.
Start off again with your friends and the girls in the back and the boys up on the roof rack. Who's that? Billy Thorpe and the Aztecs, Chris.
That's it.
You a fan of Aztecs, Chris?
Oh, no, I don't really know it too well. I've seen a little bit. I actually had a DVD titled Sunbury with Billy Thorpe, and yeah, it was all good, but I probably haven't watched it for 15 years, so yeah. No, I like the lyrics are clever, I find. I'm not much wouldn't know much about songwriting, but I find it clever, and yeah. I like their 70s outfits and all that, the retro suits and all that, yeah.
Although not, you know, I've never seen you wear old-fashioned things.
Well, I don't really have any. They're hard to come by.
In 97, maybe a bit easier, I guess.
Yeah, there was...
Before I went off shopping, you probably could still get bargains.
It's pre-Kramer. Kramer turned all that on his head, I think. Suddenly, everyone wanted it.
Because in 97, like, gear like what they were wearing in the film clip, I mean, a lot of it was probably still in people's closets and wouldn't be... like sought after like it would be today or something.
Did your grandparents have mothballs, Chris? My nana had mothballs or silverfish, that smell, to get rid of moths and stuff.
I do know that there was a kid at school and he just always smelled of mothballs, and there was another kid who always gave him a hard time about it. I don't want to mention people's names.
That boy was John Banton.
No, he's not here. No.
Stu, did you get to listen to the album a little bit before today? Or no?
No, I didn't go full in on the whole album, no, just the few cuts. But I definitely remember the cover. It was quite a distinctive album and at the time. I think it made a little bit of an impression, but I never owned it. I never, well, neither did you, but I never stole it off a mate.
Because this was the lead single and it came out 7 months before the album did. We talked a little bit on the doco of the album that the record company didn't really see or were a bit confused. They were at wits, like, what single should we release first? And so they released this before the album came out and it sort of tanked, didn't do anywhere as good as Dogs Are the Best People or even Self Abuser. And it actually appears, I think, on the last two or three songs on the album. So it's a bit weird to bury a head single at the bottom, isn't it? It's like
very odd.
Smells Like Teen Spirit. Track 10 or something.
You start with track 3, don't you? Isn't that the lead single? Track 3, yeah. Maybe? Or track 1, even?
Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4. Pretty common.
This video
that is, could... if the rest of it sucks.
Where does Pinstripe come on elsewhere?
Second. It's not a single.
No.
Number 3, Captain. First single. Oh, yeah. There you go.
Did anyone have Foxtel in 98? I did for a little.
We had it for a brief period. I think we got a trial and I watched a lot of Channel V for about 6 months and then I think my parents cancelled the trial, and that was a bit devastating. But yeah, it would have been around this time, I reckon. Yeah, 97, 98.
They were probably disgusted by Jabba, yeah?
I think they were like, what a waste of time. We don't watch it. And I'm like, I watch it a lot. What are you talking about?
Because they played this clip a lot on Triple J. On Channel V, pay TV music channel. And even before I saw the band. So I don't know if they're paying the payola or paying off Rupert Murdoch or Telstra. But yeah, it got quite a big run, this clip. More than I ever remember seeing Surf City Limits.
I don't want to speak for Rupert Murdoch, but I mean, I heard maybe he was a bit of a fan back then.
Maybe.
Sunbury 73, that's when I only owned 20 newspapers back then. Oh, I was so young.
Conceived Lachlan in Sunbury.
I think Lachlan's 71, isn't it? The other one, yeah. Well, that's all I've really got to say about this song, guys. I like it. I've always liked this song. And it's a shame we don't get to hear them play it for whatever reason. Occasionally I hear people in the audience call for it out. But
Oh, so it really is from the archives. It's not in the live set, as far as you know, recently.
Yeah. I'm trying to put it in terms you might understand, Tim. It's their Geek Stink Breath or something. Was that a single? Is that a fondly remembered
song? It's a failed single, is it? Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah. Yeah. Or whatever the B-side to Time of Your Life was, whatever. I don't know. I hear people shout out for it occasionally, but there we are. Any last thoughts on the suburb, Chris? Sunbury or?
No, I just find it a nice place. It's a little bit away from Evering, but Evering's there. And yeah, no, I like it.
I think the helicopter's a nice touch. Always up for a helicopter in a film clip.
Yeah.
It's gone all out. These days you just get a drone, but yeah.
Can I interest you gentlemen in joining me for another review episode?
Sure.
I might duck out, but thanks for the invite. No, I'll see you.
All right. We'll catch you next time on the podcast where we talk about all things about the band, the Foes.
The Foes.
Foes. You didn't brief us on this part.
If I knew the answer to how that good one's come, then I'd do it every day and I'd have thousands of good songs.
Let's try this one. Your lyrics are often praised for their wit and depth. Can you share a bit about your songwriting process?
I can. Yeah, well, look, it's quite banal, really. I mean, it's really nothing more than sitting down with a guitar and fooling around. And if there's a riff or a chord sequence, I'll always record it onto my dictaphone. I might not come back to it for a while. And so I tend to end up, some songs just spew straight out. Others are patchworks from going back to listening to the stuff that I've recorded and going, oh, that might work with that, and piecing things together more. So, but yeah, it always just takes place here in this same room, that in this very bland little officey music room that I've got. And just it's never a process of going, okay, I have to write a song today. It's just sit down, don't force it, play the guitar. Some days nothing sounds good. Other days, ooh, that might be something. So that's a broad outline of the process, yeah.
With his woo! Yeah.
tell us, sir, your name. You were at
I'm Danny.
Danny?
Yeah, I was at the launch of Sunbury 97 single in, must have been 1997, at the Pally Bar in Frankston. And, you know, I went with a friend. I was very excited. I mean, you know, they'd done very well off Future Spar and hit the top of Triple J, and you think, oh, this is it. They're going to hit the big time. And I was a fan of them already. And, well, the Pally Bar is quite a large venue. Now, right. Up the back, there was probably about four or five guys up the back of the bar, sitting at the bar, looking at that. And me and my mate were the only two in the large audience having a dance and having a long. And, you know, the professionals I've always been is they still played fun, and they we had a bit of very personalised banter, let's put it that way.
That we all love and know, yeah.
Well, and again, it's... and, yeah, that sort of... I was a bit disappointing that they didn't hit the big time, but... You know, it wasn't long after they did played another gig at the Pally, and it was a sellout. And now,
was it advertised as the Sunbury 97 launch? Like,
absolutely, yeah. As I say, I actually pulled off the got the poster.
The handbill, yeah.
Oh, not the hand. Well, the poster, large. Yeah. What do we say? I don't know. A2 poster, yeah. Because it goes that way. So A2 poster. Coxie signed it. Dear Dan, you danced! Exclamation mark. Pretty sure it's still at my mum's house. Yeah, so that was, I mean, again, like, subsequently, there was a few big gigs at the Pally they played, and especially because Coxie's sister came down. But, yeah, it was just, that was meant to be the, I don't know, you know, I was a younger man then, and you felt that was going to be the launching pad of, to the big time, and, yeah, it never quite, well, yeah.
Do you remember the supports for that gig? Were there any supports?
I don't believe there were. No, it wasn't that gig. It was another gig, A-Grain.
Yep.
Who were also a band from Manalisa Secondary College or Manalisa High School.
That's where you're from, is it?
That's where I first interfaced. Yeah, I'm about 10 years their junior, but that's how I knew them.
Recovery, Australia's biggest bands, just seemed like friends who wandered into your share house. There were a couple of times Recovery had a guest host. I guess Dylan had to have days off every now and again. It was odd turning into Recovery with no Dylan. Instead, there was Coxie from The Foes or Dave McCormack from Custard. McCormack had the bad luck of being a guest host when Friends of Ron were on a second time. They attacked him with actual custard. I think it says a lot about McCormack and Coxie that they were both charismatic enough to hold a whole TV show, and that they were willing to do it, because I assumed that, in part, it looked fun.
Look, I should reintroduce myself, because I'm Andrew, I'm from The Foves, and we're the house band. We're also, you might have got up late and just not know who the hell we are. We're the house band, we're also hosting, so we're having a great time, hope you are. And it's
Now, I wanted to ask you about your fanzine, Shred. You've had a few of those out, but I haven't seen any for a while. Are you still doing that?
Yeah, we are, in theory. We're sort of in the process of doing the next one. We've been very lazy.
There's a lot of work involved.
There is a lot of work, yeah. It's, you know, it's sort of, I can sort of liken it to, I don't know, the process that Joyce went through when writing Finnegan's Wake, for instance.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we borrow a lot from early 20th century fiction, actually.
Well, that comes through in your lyrics as well, yeah.
Yeah, well, we're highly intelligent and educated people, but we started sort of writing and it was just really lame. It wasn't funny, it wasn't thought-provoking, it wasn't interesting in any way, so we sort of put it aside.
Mm-hmm. Not funny anymore, basically.
No,
you're just too used to your own humour, that's all.
You could be onto something there, because we're going to force another one out. I think it'll be out in a month or so, hopefully.
Excellent.
Get our act together, so.
Good.
Yeah.
Looking forward to that one.
It's radio. It's not, you know, it's all very well to have a fucking Australian hour and things like that, but we need proper
support, yeah.
We get more ads in fucking Woolworths, Coles and Chemist Warehouse than we get on fucking radio.
It's programmed.
Seriously.
Which is programmed by Nova, ironically. Those radio stations in supermarkets.
Aussie music is something to be proud of. Wear it like a badge. Because it's Australian bands and artists that are the influences of so many other musicians the world over. So at Triple M,
we're proud to be able to showcase the power of the Aussie music scene.
Bullshit! To the greats that have stood the test of time, right alongside the current, the emerging, the future influences.
The ones that will be next to make their mark on the global music scene.
If it's Aussie and it rocks, it's right here. Bullshit! With Matty O.
Thank you.
What do you reckon, Doctor?
Dogs!
Right, well, I've shouted, I'm exhausted.
Yes, I'm exhausted too.
Artist and repertoire.
Guys running around left, right and centre trying to sign bands and trying to ingratiate themselves.
Yeah.
But it's not like the 50s, you've got a song that's published and you try and hawk it around to people to play or...
No, but...
He wasn't telling you what songs to write, was he? Because you said...
Oh, yeah, he was trying to. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I mean, fuck you.
Yeah, so... Yeah, I mean, their job, A&R, is... It's trying to sign bands. It's trying to direct the bands that are currently on the label as to how they, who they should work with, what they should, you know, what they should sound like, you know. So you're right at the coalface, like it's
Well, I mean, it wasn't really peak A&R times. That would have been more.
It was. I suppose I'm saying it was like the, in some ways like the dying days of the A&R man.
Yeah.
Did he suggest, why don't you write a song about focaccias or something?
No, it was more like you'd come back with a song which you thought was great, and he'd say it was shit and didn't, would want to bury it, and some other song you'd. We'd come up with, and then you'd think, "Yeah, it's not great." And he'd want to make a fucking first thing.
He'd want to chop it up,
or you'd edit them.
Hello again. This is Chad from Perth, Western Australia, and I'm about to weigh in on my reasons for including Sunbury 97 as one of my top tracks ever. Point one on the list: does it remind me of a good time? Was it the soundtrack to a particular time in my life? Yeah, look, so Lazy Highways, what, released 1998. It didn't work on me till about, I was super late to the party, so I didn't get it in my ears until probably about the year 2000. Yeah, so when Thousand Yard Stare came out, I was enamored with this wonderful album, and I discovered that my friend Tim, who was my housemate at the time, had a copy of Lazy Highways. Now, oh, look, you know, how things happen in the shuffle of of property in a share house, and I'm pretty sure, if I'm being fair, that the copy of Lazy Highways on CD that I own now is probably Tim's copy, who I used to live with. But man, does this song, Sunbury 97, put me back to a good time? Yeah, man, living in that share house, partying, the best times, drinking Goon, listening to the Foves. Oh, man, it was a good time. It was a really good time in my life. And Sunbury 97 provided the soundtrack to that. Now, in particular, the lyrical content of Sunbury 97, you know, getting your mates together, getting in the car, all going to a festival. You know, 2000 for me was the golden age of... I was a young person then, and... We were going to festivals all the time. The big day out was crazy. All my mates were there. We were having the best time. So, you know, listening to the Foves tell this story of going to the Sunbury Festival, it just sounded so awesome, and I just wanted to get in the car with them. Does it remind me of a good time? Yeah, it reminded me of a good time that I had, and it reminded me of a good time that I wished I had, hanging out with the Foves, going to that awesome festival at Sunbury. Yeah, so point two on my list, Lazy Highways, as I'm sure we will all agree, it was, you know, one of the greatest driving records ever put to tape. It's all there in the title, really, Lazy Highways. But it's one of my favourites to drive down to see my parents. They live about 2 hours out of Perth, so, you know, put this on. I'm in the car. I'm on the highway. Everything's where it should be. And, yeah, I can't help but have this album wrapped up in those good times and, you know, and also other times of great gravity. Like, now, what's point three on my scientific list of judgment? Have I included it on a mixtape or a CD? Well, look, as luck would have it, I've got my mix CD here. I don't have any tapes around, but this is a song. It's been one of my favourites forever, and I have included it upon... pretty much every mix CD that I've ever bothered to put together for friends. And let me see, where is Sunbury 97? Yep, here it is. Oh, in between Self-Abuser and Kicking On in the Foves section of this CD here, amongst, you know, many other bands. But yeah, you know what? I thought so much of this song that I put it on a mixed CD that I give to other people. So I think that speaks volumes for people of a certain age, and I am of a certain age. So this reminds me of how my band got to support the Fauves, Burgers of Beef, a local band for local people, somehow managed to secure the WA leg of the Fauves tour when they were touring Nervous Flashlights in 2006. And, you know, I was a super-duper big Fauves fan, trying my best and failing probably to play it cool around the Fauves and not overcook stuff. And I remember with with vivid clarity and horror, gosh, we were loading out, and I think it might have been Bunbury, where we were loading out the night after the gig, and we'd all stayed there in hotels. And I remember putting the stuff, like I had a trailer at the time. I'm sure this is fascinating, but I was loading up all of our backline in the back of the trailer, and I had my CD player playing in the car, and I had a bloody mix CD playing in there that had some Fauves tracks on it, and it didn't dawn on me till the last second that Sunbury was firing up. And I remember running in slow motion, like, you know, like in a movie, like the $6 million man or something, trying to get to my CD player to turn off the song just in case one of the Fauves heard me, and I was outed as a massive fan. And I'm not sure why I'd be so embarrassed. I don't know. It just felt like it wouldn't be cool, but then again, it doesn't really matter. And they all knew that I was a big fan anyway. Ah, who cares? I'm overthinking it. I'm overcooking it yet again. But anyway, number four on my list. Do the Brown Guitars make me want to pick up a guitar and form a band? Man, Sunbury 97. Those brown, sludgy Fauves guitars. What are they, down-tuned or something? I don't bloody know. They sound so bloody good. And they make you want to play air guitar. They make me want to do high kicks. And they make me want to form a band. Do you know what? Here, I'll tell you this for free. So, kicking on, Sunbury 97, Brown Guitar. My other two favourite songs of the Fauves, Dragster for Christmas and Three Piece. They've all got the brownest guitars, and they all make me want to immediately pick up my guitar and form a band that only does Fauves covers. It's going to be amazing. Who's with me? I've got the brownest guitar sound around. It's going to be awesome. So there you go. Yeah. So this ticks all four boxes on my scientific list of of what it makes, what it is to make the perfect pop song. So good on you, Fauves. Well done. When I form my Fauves cover band, only playing brown guitar music for brown guitar loving people, we are going to dress exclusively like the people, like the Fauves did in the Sunbury 97 film clip. And look, a special mention to that bloody helicopter. They must have got every cent out of that. It's in every shot. Well done. Excellent use of the company dollar. Whoever paid for the bloody thing, good on you, Fauves. You did well. You squeezed every drop out of it. Oh my God. Go and watch Sunbury 97, the film clip. It's so good. And I'm going to be taking submissions for the Fauves cover band via snail mail. And thanks very much. See you later.
What do we know about helicopters? A mate of mine who knows how to fly them said it's being in, you're flying a machine that is trying to tear itself apart at all times. I won't get in them, by the way. That's something I won't do. I will not get in them.
I am with you.
I will not get in them.
The only time you ever hear about, you know, that and light aircraft. No, it's like you only hear about them on the news in a bad way.
We've missed a clip, Sunbury 97. That was another one.
Oh yes.
Yeah, yeah. Let's
tell me about that.
Let's go back to that. I guess that was that was pre-Surf City Limits. So, you know, that was another step up where we hired a helicopter, which was a helicopter big enough to fit the whole band in, and Teddy, and we flew to the original Sunbury site, and we shot on the hill of Sunbury where the famous, you know, Sunbury concerts were held. So, so that was still quite a big budget clip, and to be in the helicopter and fly to the site, it was just a really special day. And my reference for that song was the Stones' Gimme Shelter documentary, where they where they flew in a helicopter, and then as soon as all the shit happened at Altamont, they just got in and flew the fuck out of there, you know. So that was the concept for that one. this was before Teddy was in the band and he played the manager. So I think, Craig was a bit pissed off about that, and some of those shots had to be cut out a little bit because, it made Teddy look like the hero. But in the end, and we used all that original 70s footage of Sunbury, which was from Super 8, and that looked fantastic. And I think next year, actually, this is probably dropping a bit of a bombshell, but they're going to do some sort of Sunbury concert, and they want possibly the Foves to play and me to say something. So let's see what happens with that, yeah.
What sizzle? That would be great.
Yeah, because to the Sunbury artists, they really appreciated that the Foves were, a modern band that were referencing what they had done in the past. And I think even when we were on site, I think it was Phil Manning, I can't remember what band he was in, but he rang the doctor and said, rock out, man, or something like that on set. So it was once again, it was a very surreal day, and that was a great clip.
Follow the sun, follow Sunbury 1987. Get our tickets and our cigarettes. Shriek rap at the cell phone and out from there's the tree where mom and dad can see me. Do you believe that I'm a child of Sunbury 73? Because we're raising up the roof tonight, driving round town in the warm moonlight. Hey, did I mention, look what we're getting. Access all areas to heaven, Sunbury 97. The Sandman again with your friends, and the girls in the back, and the boys, well, they're up on the roof. Right, who's that? Billy Thorpe and the Aztecs. I've got dreams to rename a town in every state. Sunbury, follow me. Yeah, National 11, B-A-A-A-B. Hey, red, because we're raising up the roof. Driving around town in the warm moonlight. Hey, did I mention, look what we're getting. Access all areas to heaven, Sunbury 97. Raising up the roof tonight. We're driving round in the warm moonlight. Hey, did I mention, look what we're getting. Yeah. Hey, alright. Because we're raising up the roof tonight. We're driving round in the warm moonlight. Up on the speakers, seven speakers. The first one's a dot, the next one's a keeper. Recording something 97.
Thank you so much.
Let's try a couple more. We'll really take the night out with a bit of a dance. I'm going to dance. None of the dudes want to dance. It's just the chicks. Any dudes out there want to dance? Any dudes out there want to meet chicks? Okay.
Okay, we're drift. Okay, Ted, we're drifting off message, mate.
Ted's the only guy in Oz Rock who's not a roadie wearing a Zildjian t-shirt on stage.
I love my drums, mate. You heard my solo.
We'll talk about that later, Ted.